Joe Biden is doing that, created 9 million jobs in his term in office. So we just have to make sure people know.
That was a global pandemic.
He had the worst record of any president. We've had other concerns in our country. If you want to be an apologist for Donald Trump, that may be your role, but it ain't mine.
The Ministry of Peace concerns itself with war. The Ministry of Truth with lies. The Ministry of Love with torture. And the Ministry of Plenty with starvation. These contradictions are not accidental, nor do they result from ordinary hypocrisy. They are the deliberate exercises in doublethink. Just Orwellian fiction, right? It could never happen in America.
You look at what a liberal is today. They're pro-war, they're pro-censorship, they're pro-torture, they're pro-pedophilia, they are pro-mutilation of children, and incentivize people not to work so they can break down society. They destroy everything they get their hands on.
You're trying to get more neutrality, less partisanship, and break through this wall of fake news.
What we need is a Wikipedia of news. And I thought, well, that's interesting, that very different politics from mine, from yours. But they thought, we just need facts.
They're using Wikipedia for Google's AI as its programming script. NPR CEO Catherine Mayer reveals how she ruined Wikipedia.
For our most tricky disagreements, seeking the truth and seeking to convince others of the truth might not be the right place to start. Truth of the matter is very often, for many people, what happens when we merge facts about the world with our beliefs about the world. So we all have different truths. They're based on things like where we come from, how we were raised, and how other people perceive us.
So you're an animal we program, but we're gods, and we tell you what to think and do. And when we say something's moral, it is. When you say something is your moral compass, it doesn't exist.
The ways in which I ascribe notability often really comes from sort of this white male westernized construct around who matters in societies and who is elevated and whose voices. And so some of these ideas of sort of this radical openness really did not end up living into the intentionality of what openness can be.
Wow, you talk about cult brainwashing. What openness can be, it's distorted reality that then NPR and CNN and all the rest of them go to so they can read off the same sheet of music in their little symphony of deception.
I found 87 registered Democrats working in editorial positions and zero Republicans, none. How is having an 87-0 balance fair?
Because NPR is in Washington, but it's not for Washington. It's a national trust. And Washington, D.C. as a city is more than 95% Democrat. So geographically, that kind of makes sense.
In 1984, George Orwell, who was Eric Blair, came from a very elite family that had then lost its money. He'd been in the imperial police in India and around the world. He became a communist. He then became one of the top Fabian socialists. He was the head of propaganda for the OSS. Placed inside the BBC. It was a cult of power at the top that wanted to destroy reason and destroy logic so they could rule over everyone. But Eric Blair explained this, that O'Brien torturing Winston in 1984 is the archetype of the Fabian socialist. And says, listen, Winston, we know you were following the party. We know you weren't going to resist us. We just want to torture a beautiful soul that could still see beauty and see goodness and totally wreck your mind until when I show you five fingers or four fingers, you don't see any fingers. You only see a blur and what I tell you, because there is no truth except I'm going to trample you and I'm going to be trampled and tortured, destroyed as well. Very soon, Winston, because we serve dark forces that want to destroy humanity and stomp on a human face forever. And then we're going to put you in a furnace, Winston, and we're going to shoot your ashes and gases into the atmosphere, and we're going to erase you from every piece of history, and you will never exist, because this is about our cult of power, the priest of power, being God and suspending the family. And when we're done, the IQs will drop, and people won't be able to talk, and we're going to kill everyone. Kill every human on Earth.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Took my Brain Force Ultra. Getting ready to take on the day. Yes, all the talk today, thank you. All the talk today, frankly, sounds like we did several months ago. InfoWars, tomorrow's news today. Yeah, we'll get into the anti-Semitism bill. That, of course, is the biggest story, and it relates to many of the other stories that we'll be discussing here today. We'll be taking your calls on the topic as well. I think I'll put out the phone number probably in the second hour for new callers specifically. I always enjoy hearing from our regulars, but we got to leave some phone lines free for some strangers. And let's just get into it. Here it is, your Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Thursday, the 2nd of May, 2024. House passes bill to expand definition of anti-Semitism amid growing campus protests over Gaza war. The House passed legislation Wednesday that would establish a broader definition of anti-Semitism for the Department of Education to enforce anti-discrimination laws. The latest response from lawmakers to a nationwide student protest movement over the Israel-Hamas war. The proposal, which passed 320-91 with some bipartisan support, would codify the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's definition of anti-Semitism in the Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, a federal anti-discrimination law that bars discrimination based on shared ancestry, ethnic characteristics, or national origin. It now goes to the Senate, where its fate is uncertain. And yes, we will get into the particulars of this bill. A lot of people online saying it makes essentially the gospel illegal. We'll look into whether or not that's true. Spoiler alert. Yeah, pretty much is. Pretty much, though. Yeah, it is. So again, we'll touch on this in just a minute. In fact, we'll probably spend almost the entirety of the show on that, if I had to guess, because it's a very big deal and causing a bit of an awakening online. So we'll get into that holistic attack against the First Amendment in just a little bit. Meanwhile, quote, it was brutal. Second Boeing-linked whistleblower dies. A whistleblower at Boeing supplier Spirit AeroSystems died Tuesday morning following a struggle with a sudden fast-spreading infection, the Seattle Times reports. 45-year-old Joshua Dean, a former mechanical engineer and quality auditor from Wichita, Kansas, alleged that Spirit leadership ignored manufacturing defects on the 737 MAX, including mechanics improperly drilling holes in the aft pressure bulkhead of the MAX. When he finally brought this up to management, he said that nothing was done about it. So he filed a safety complaint with the FAA and said that Spirit had used him as a scapegoat while they lied to the agencies about the defects. Saying, quote, after I was fired, Spirit AeroSystems initially did nothing to inform the FAA and the public regarding the bulkhead defects, said Dean in his complaint. And now he has died from a mysterious and very fast-acting disease of some sort. Let me take a look into that a little bit later. We got some crime news now. Police chief sounds alarm after felon charged with 105 crimes is now charged with kidnapping and raping a female Amazon driver. A convicted felon who's been charged for over 100 offenses in Nashville, Tennessee, is again behind bars, this time for kidnapping and raping an Amazon delivery woman. According to police, Jerome Hamilton, 34, last week attacked the victim as she delivered packages, pushing her into a mailroom where he sexually assaulted her. 25-year-old victim was delivering packages to the building around 4 a.m. Friday, April 26, when Hamilton allegedly pushed her further into the mailroom and shut the door. We don't need to get into the details, but he also stole $100 from her. Let's see, so he's 34 years old. So he's probably averaging, we can assume that his criminal career probably didn't start before around the age of 14, so that's 20 years of criminal activity, that's five arrest and convictions a year. Just imagine what that life is like. Just imagine what your life is like, where every 2 months you're arrested and charged with a new crime. How is this even possible?
Sounds like a movie, right?
The worst movie ever. You know, we used to have this thing called like the three strike rule, something like that. Maybe we could be like a little bit more lenient. I think once you're in the double digits, I think once you have been arrested and convicted of 10 things, like 10 different instances.
Like the 33 strike rule?
What's that?
Like on your 33rd strike. He made it to 105 strikes.
Yeah, I think 10 is enough. No, I think 10 is enough. I think that when you've been arrested and put on trial 10 times, I think at that point you should just be killed by the state. I think at that point you just, you know what? We tried, this whole life thing isn't working out for you. Electric chair, injection, or work camps. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. Maybe bringing back like public executions that are like elaborate, you know, like medieval style. How can you be arrested and convicted 105 times? I mean, this just makes no sense. It just makes no sense. We'll have to get into the, maybe we'll have to like really break down the numbers here. Like, it literally doesn't make sense. How can you be charged every 2 months for something? So every time he's charged, he's punished for less than a month, and then it's just a month later that he commits another crime. Like, just temporally, like the time doesn't, this doesn't even make sense. How you have the time to commit this much crime. Not just the stuff he's caught for. God only knows. It might sound brutal. It might sound uncaring. Say like, hey, you get 10 felonies. You get a little punch card. Like a Subway, but instead of getting a free footlong, you get a free trip. About 3 feet down. You are rapidly transported 3 feet down before the rope is taut, and you can dangle there for as long as we want. I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe people get uncomfortable with this idea. You know what I'm uncomfortable with is the 24-year-old woman trying to make a living and being brutally raped by this societal cancer, by this human cancer cell that needs to be extricated for the sake of the healthy cells. Just brutal. And then this in crime as well. Two detained after 70-plus overdoses and multiple deaths. This is in Austin. Two people believed to be persons of interest have been detained following an outbreak of overdoses that left multiple people dead. That's according to Austin Travis County EMS. As of Wednesday, the EMS responded to about 70 suspected overdoses, but there could be more as the week continues. When the EMS was asked about if all 8 deaths involved in this outbreak were opioid-related, they told us, I do know those 8 were suspects of being were suspected of being opioid-related. They responded to 37 overdoses on Monday, 27 on Tuesday, and 7 on Wednesday. So, I mean, if these were shootings, it would be the biggest story in the country. This would be days, like day after day of mass murders. Must be a serial killer spree. That would be dominating every headline on every outlet. Instead, it's fentanyl overdoses, so it hardly even gets reported in the local news. And obviously the tragedy here is the loss of human life, obviously, but on top of that, just from a purely material standpoint, just think about all the effort, all the resources, all of the energy wasted, you know, spent just running around cleaning up after the criminals. Just EMS workers working their fingers to the bone just to stop people dying from fentanyl overdoses. They handed out more than 100 doses of Narcan on Tuesday. Yeah, our country's being destroyed. And finally, we have this from InfoWars. Mega bombshell CIA official confesses to deep state coup against Trump and the American people. We'll go to that video here shortly. We got to censor it a little bit. James O'Keefe getting a little lazy on us. He used to censor all of his videos. Now we have to do it. So we'll go to that video just as soon as it's censored. Another CIA operative just openly bragging about subverting the election and then saying he's doing it for the sake of democracy. This time, the intelligence operative bragging about controlling America outside of the view of the electorate has an accent. So this is a foreigner in our country doing this. Just the levels of insanity are really beyond description. So that's your Daily Dispatch, brought to you by BrainForce Ultra. BrainForce Ultra now on sale at InfoWarsStore.com, as well as Survivor Shield X3 and a Nitric Boost, Ultimate Fish Oil. You're getting 10% off storable food and water filters. Let's get into anti-Semitism, shall we? I'm sort of torn how to even deal with this. Because I feel like part of what the strategy is right now is to inspire anti-Semitism. We talked about this a little bit with, you know, why George Soros would want to fund these anti-Israel protests. You know, why he would actually be supporting the, you know, pro-Palestine side. And the answer is obvious, because of this, because of the outcome of the protest. You get anti-Semitism laws. So part of it, you know, part of me is like, okay, if they're going to actually try to make anti-Semitism illegal, which is what they're doing, and we'll get into the details, I guess the best thing for us to say at the outset of covering this is, we told you so. We've told you so. For months upon months, we have warned about the definition of anti-Semitism being changed, that change to definition being enshrined into law, and those laws being used to eradicate free speech in general here in America. So it's nice to see everybody waking up to this threat, but it's significantly bigger than you may be led to believe. And we'll touch on it again. We'll go over it again. It'll be boring for our audience. Our typical audience has heard this over and over again. I see a lot of people online talking about how this makes the gospel illegal, makes it illegal to publish certain pages of the Bible that make claims about things like the Jews killing Jesus. That's the very, very beginning. The way this AP News article covers it: House passes bill to expand definition of anti-Semitism amid growing campus protests over Gaza war. Expanding the definition of anti-Semitism. That's the least important thing that this bill does. And this bill is sort of the least intense of all the bills being put forward. If passed by the Senate and signed into law, the bill would broaden the legal definition of anti-Semitism to include, quote, targeting the state of Israel, conceived as a Jewish collectivity. Critics say that the move would have a chilling effect on free speech throughout college campuses and just general life. Speech that is critical of Israel alone does not constitute unlawful discrimination, said Jerry Nadler during a hearing Tuesday. By encompassing purely political speech about Israel into Title VI's ambit, the bill sweeps too broadly. Advocates of the proposal say it would provide a much-needed, consistent framework for the Department of Education to police and investigate the rising cases of discrimination and harassment targeted towards Jewish students. So, and we can look into, and, you know, frankly, they've gone too far. They've gone too far at this point. Nobody outside of bought and paid for politicians and boomer television watchers think this is a good idea. You even have people who before would make exception for things like Israel, rail against hate speech, but then they say, but anti-Semitism is a serious problem. Even though anti-Semitism is just hate speech, just Jewish hate speech. But Matt Walsh, like everybody at the Daily Wire, except for, I don't know, what's Ben Shapiro saying about it? He probably loves the thing, if I had to guess. Typically, Matt Walsh and the other guy usually follow Ben's lead, but in this case, even they recognize that this is a serious threat to our ability to speak freely. So again, I'm sort of torn as to whether I should sort of treat this in a mature and responsible sort of way and just discuss how this very serious threat to our ability to speak freely, and while you know we're not going to promote anti-Semitism here, we need to understand how these labels are used in order to get people to go along with this restriction of free speech. We could do that and treat it very professionally and upright. Could go the other direction. Could go the entire other direction. Because after all, I mean, we talked about this last week. I mean, if they're going to make anti-Semitism illegal, I got to, out of principle, be as anti-Semitic as possible. I don't want to, but they're making me. They're forcing me. What's Ben Shapiro say? Our campuses are left-wing activism training centers. Gee, who started that, I wonder? Who's in charge of the Ivy League schools, I wonder? I wonder what type of person is the principal, the president of 7 out of 9 of the Ivy League schools that are leading this academic charge. I wonder if they all share any sort of characteristics. See, that's the thing. I don't know. I don't know which way to take this. I don't know which way to take this. Again, out of just sheer principle, I gotta do the thing that they tell me not to do. I gotta say the things they tell me not to say. I gotta make the arguments that heretofore would have not been made because they don't exactly contribute to a healthy discussion. But if healthy discussion is illegal, well, maybe we need to get unhealthy with it. So sorry, if we bring up old Benny Boy's tweet again. Remove their taxpayer funding. West Virginia minors should not subsidize gender study major Hamas fans. The solution is not to pass a bad bill, adding yet more free speech violations to the giant free speech violation that is Title VI. Okay, so he's saying he's not for the bill. That his overriding concern is the anti-Semitism expressed by people on campus. I remind you, the campus protests are students protesting against the genocide that we're seeing play out in real time on our social media feeds, whereas the things like anti-whiteism on college campuses are actually from the colleges themselves. It's courses that are explicitly about destroying white people and, you know, diversity rubrics by which opposition to white people is considered a paramount objective of every type of class, not even just like societal humanities stuff that actually has to do with race, but, you know, even injecting it into things like math. Ben Shapiro, champion of West Virginia minors. When I think Ben Shapiro, I think blue-collar champion. Got some videos to show you about this. Oh boy, are they something. Let's go to clip number 3 here. We got time to go to this, even though I don't know if we do. We tried to play this last night on Moonbase Live. We only got through about 13 seconds of it, so I had to keep pausing just to figure out what exactly was being said versus what it sounds like you're hearing. You'll see what I mean. Let's go to clip number 3 now. Here's an announcement from the GOP about anti-Semitism.
For more than a week, the world has watched as pro-terrorist anti-Semites at American universities exude some of the clearest acts of bigotry against Jewish students on campus since the late 1930s in Nazi Germany. From forming human chains around Jewish students to block them from walking on campus, to chanting for the total annihilation of Israel, to promoting Hitler's final solution. It's safe to say these demonstrations are not a movement for peace, as some of our colleagues on the other side of the aisle have disgustingly referred to them. They are movements of pure anti-Semitic violence. And let's take note of those who've endorsed these pro-terrorist anti-Semites. A terrorist organization, Hamas, the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism, Iran, and members of the squad, including my colleague from Minnesota, Ilhan Omar, not exactly good company. Congresswoman Omar encouraged these movements for hate at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus, promoting me to inquire with the university about its plans to keep Jewish students safe. She then continued to pour gas on the fire when she visited Columbia to publicly suggest that some Jewish students are pro-genocide. Let me be clear. By embracing pro-terrorist extremists, Ilhan Omar is encouraging violence against Jewish students. There should be zero tolerance for anti-Semitism on our college campuses, in our communities, or anywhere across our country.
You know, at a certain point, it's not even worth it to, like, break down what he's saying. These anti-Semitic pro-terrorist act. It's pretty simple. If you're against Israel's wholesale indiscriminate bombing of women and children in Gaza, then you know, you're a part of the Palestinian support crowd. And if you support Palestine, that means you support Hamas. If you support Hamas, that means you're basically a terrorist sympathizer. You're a Nazi. You agree with Hitler's final solution. Your ideas are beyond the pale, and you must be crushed with the full force and weight of the U.S. government. And then he has the gall, the stupidity, I don't know what it is, to be like, she's inspiring violence against what people you just called Nazi terrorists. You don't think that's going to inspire violence? We'll go through some of the things in this new anti-Semitism bill, dictating what you can and cannot express. And we'll express them all. Oh, we'll elaborate on all of these things. Before we do, let's go to one Republican that hasn't just completely given his soul to the Israel lobby. It's Chip Roy in Texas, clip number one. Here he is decrying the government's newfound ability to dictate thought. Let's watch.
But here's the thing. Yet again today on the floor of the House of Representatives, we had another show vote to make people feel good about themselves by passing a bill that says anti-Semitism in the title. That's what happened. And it was put on the floor by Republican leadership. And it was put on the floor by Republican leadership despite knowing that it was pulled from going through committee. We didn't have a chance to amend it. We didn't have a chance to discuss it, to debate it. We didn't have a hearing on it. It was jammed through to take advantage of this political moment while all of these horrific things are going around the country. Republican leadership wanted to score political points, so they moved through legislation without the kind of deliberation debate that is supposed to be carried out by the people in this chamber. As a result, today, a significant number of my Republican colleagues, including myself, voted no. As a result, we will be accused of, I don't know, being for anti-Semitic behavior, being accused by our friends and allies of not wanting to support Israel, supporting our Jewish American colleagues and friends, constituents, fellow Americans. Nothing could be further from the truth, but that's what will happen. And it'll happen because we dared to stand up and say, we don't believe in thought police. We don't believe that a bill should be brought to the floor of the United States House of Representatives having not gone through committee, that has a reference in it to international organizations' definitions, literally in the statute, and then taking that international organization's definition, and then literally in the statute, representing and referencing the examples of anti-Semitic behavior. Now, I find the vast majority of the things that were listed in that to be horrific activity, most likely, if not certainly, anti-Semitic, at least in most contexts. Some of them are problematic. In totality, they certainly raise First Amendment concerns. They certainly raise concerns about something that I've opposed to the best of my knowledge and ability, reading through pieces of legislation at every turn and every vote, to oppose the whole notion of hate speech, hate crimes, thought police, thought crimes, putting the government into your head and your motivations when you're engaged in criminal behavior. Criminal behavior is criminal behavior. Violating people's civil rights is violating people's civil rights. But when we want to insert the government into what you're thinking and what motivates you, you are empowering that which should never be empowered. The ability of the government to police thought, to police speech, to police your views. Not the views that carry out, then the actions. The actions are the problem. Police the actions.
As we heard in the previous statement, the action they're confronting is the expression of bigoted, hateful views, obviously. So he's right, for the most part, about this. And it's good to see some Republicans actually standing for free speech. But they're massively outnumbered by the ones diving headlong into this. Censored Men wrote this on Twitter. It's funny, people claimed to be awake after COVID. People claimed to be awake after the Black Lives Matter riots. People claimed to be awake after J6. People claimed to be awake after learning about the World Economic Forum and BlackRock, but they really aren't. In fact, a large portion of the right wing is actually incredibly brain dead. It's like the Olympics of mental self-pleasure. They profess to love free speech. They claim to be awake, yet they also believe Israel is their greatest ally. Then they see college students protesting a genocide, utilizing their First Amendment rights and opposing the government's involvement in it. So they throw the First Amendment out the window for Israel and demand that the protests be shut down. Then the House passes a bill under the guise of anti-Semitism, which curtails every American's First Amendment rights. But don't worry, guys, they're awake. They're fighting the evil globalist agenda. And there you see the jackbooted thugs of the New World Order stomping protesters into the ground, arresting them, breaking up the camp there at UCLA. Massive police operation dismantles UCLA pro-Palestine camp, making numerous arrests. It really is very simple. Not sure what is confusing about this to anybody.
The protests are bought and paid for by people like George Soros and his son, and it's meant to get rid of the First Amendment. It's meant to push this anti-Semitism bill through.
Yeah, look, you have Jewish foundations funding the pro-Palestine protests that are then used to get the definition of anti-Semitism from another international Jewish organization codified into American law. It's extremely convenient. MJ Truth Ultra on X. WTF just happened. They literally passed a law that makes parts of the Bible illegal. For example, Bible passages state Jews killed Jesus. What is Mike Johnson doing? We all know when AIPAC calls, the dual citizen Israeli-U.S. puppets respond. Matt Gaetz says, this evening I will vote against the ridiculous hate speech bill called the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act. Anti-Semitism is wrong, but this legislation is written without regard to the Constitution, common sense, or even the common understanding of the meaning of words. The gospel itself would meet the definition of anti-Semitism under the terms of the bill. The bill says the definition of anti-Semitism includes contemporary examples of anti-Semitism identified by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. One of those examples includes, quote, claims of Jews killing Jesus. The Bible is clear. There is no myth or controversy on this. Therefore, I will not support the bill. And people pointing out things like Matthew 24 to 25. There answered all the people. He said, his blood be upon us and our children. But of course, the claim is that it wasn't the Jews that killed Jesus. It was the Romans. Because see, the Jews don't do their own dirty work. That's the issue here. Kind of like how it was the British that took over Palestine and founded Israel. This is, I guess, also anti-Semitic. I guess it's also anti-Semitic. Which is more anti-Semitic? Say the Jews killed Jesus, or to say the Jewish power brokers used their the Gentile nation in which they lived to carry out their desires while leaving their hands clean. Kind of like how America took out Iraq and is going to war in Syria or staging a war in Ukraine. I don't know. I need legal expertise. Maybe a lawyer or a congressman could advise me. Is it more anti-Semitic to say the Jews killed Jesus, or is it more anti-Semitic to say the Jews forced the Gentiles to do their dirty work so they could ostensibly keep their hands clean while getting exactly what they want? I need to know, because we need to know how we can discuss the Bible now. We need to know what our religious documents say. We're just getting started, folks. There's a lot of aspects of this that we haven't even touched yet. Talk about the anti-free speech law. We'll get to the undercover footage from the CIA a little bit later in the show. We're going to stick with anti-Semitism here. Well, let's go to clip 8 here. I haven't actually watched this. This is Charlie Kirk expressing thought about the similarity between the hatred espoused on college campuses these days. Let's go down to clip number 8.
And I have sympathy for American Jews that are very confused. However, I have impatience for American Jews that have put up with the anti-white sentiments the last decade and thought it was perfectly fine. Because guess what, American Jews? You're considered white in the eyes of the Marxists. What? I thought white meant like MAGA Christian people in Oklahoma. No. White means you too. Welcome to the most hated class in America today. And Jews are like, wait, I never thought I was white. I don't identify as white. We're Jewish. You don't get to determine the rules. Many American Jews are shocked that the organizations and the charities that they have been subsidizing want them dead. This is cut 67. I think this is illegal, where they are forbidding Jewish students from going to class. That Jewish kids are being physically prevented from going to class. And I want to make sure this is clear. At the foundational level, this is at UCLA. This is coast to coast. It's because they hate Western civilization, and they have now looped all Jews into the white category. So now Jews are experiencing the hate that we white people have been experiencing the last decade, and we've been warning against. Hey, you know that there's like a lot of venom against white people because of the color of their skin? Ah, too bad. Floydapalooza, BLM, diversity is our strength. And now all of a sudden Jews are saying, this kind of feels like how we got to Auschwitz. This doesn't seem right. And I'm glad they're waking up. And it is how you get to mass murder. It is how you get to elimination. By hating one group, by sectarianism and tribalism. And the reason why this is breaking the matrix is that for years, it was fashionable and acceptable to hate white people. it's not as fashionable and acceptable to hate Jews. But if you call Jews white, are you then able to hate Jews?
So that's Charlie Kirk saying Jews are experiencing the hate that white people have been experiencing the last decade. I have to say I disagree. Because protesting the actions of Israel as it indiscriminately bombs a hostage population into oblivion is not hate. That's not hate. Now, when you have Harvard courses titled Ending Whiteness, that's hate. When you have official newspapers from, you know, official college newspapers writing articles saying your DNA is an abomination, that's hate. Jews aren't experiencing hate. There's no hate being thrown at Jews on college campuses. There are protests against the genocidal actions of the state of Israel that people are casting as hate. That's not hate. That's an appropriate reaction to an outrageous geopolitical situation. Now, white people for the last decade have been subjected to unabashed, systematic hate, primarily spread by Jews. I don't know what's confusing about this. Look up who taught the Ending Whiteness course at Harvard. There's not confusion about like, well, wait, now we're being subjected to this? No, they're not. And still white people are still the ones that they hate. Basically, they're just getting like, shrapnel from the anti-white agenda that they're at the forefront of. Now, it's not hate that's inspiring protest. It's a genuine reaction to the horrifying and brutal attacks against Gaza by Israel. That's not hate. Sorry to tell you, it's not even close to hate. Now, white people have experienced hate. And not just hate, but like actual destruction, actual physical, spiritual, mental destruction. And it's usually predicated on the Holocaust. This year alone, we've seen the former chairman of the Hebrew International Aid Society, the Jewish refugee program, Alejandro Mayorkas, the former chairman who now runs our border, invoking the Holocaust as a reason why white nations can't be white anymore. We've seen Merrick Garland invoke the Holocaust in getting rid of voter security laws and allowing people to vote without ID. Time and time again, we've seen the Holocaust or other Jewish issues be the reason for the destruction of America itself, but specifically white America. And we've seen actual anti-white hatred proliferate on Ivy League campuses, 7 out of 9 of which have Jews as their presidents. Abolish the white race from Harvard Magazine. Noel Igtev or something, right? So no, Jews are not now experiencing the hatred that's been leveled at white people for 10 years. Yeah, Noel Ignatiev, long fight against whiteness. This is the guy that Charlie Kirk thinks is like unaware of what he's doing. No, he's aware. He's perfectly aware. And we can go to some videos here. How do they get this done is the question. And what exactly does this law contain? Well, here's just some of the things that will be considered anti-Semitic and therefore illegal now. Calling for, aiding, or justifying the killing or harming of Jews in the name of a radical ideology or extremist view of religion. translation supporting the resistance movement against Israel. Making mendacious, dehumanizing, demonizing, or stereotypical allegations about Jews as such, or the powers of Jews as a collective, such as, especially but not exclusively, the myth about a world Jewish conspiracy, or of Jews controlling the media, economy, government, or other societal institutions. See, making these claims will now be illegal because of a bill that, in under a week, the Jews were able to use their power and influence to get through the U.S. Congress in a bipartisan fashion in order to shut down the free speech of Americans on college campuses, as well as, you know, and obviously this has the full support of the media. And if you disagree, you know, maybe you'll get the Kanye treatment and have your billion-dollar deal destroyed right out from under you. All of these terrible things can happen to you if you dare suggest that the Jews have control over our societal institutions, power over the media or economy. That's a myth. And to prove it, they mount pass a law to make it illegal to say so. It's all a little bit ironic. But not new. But not new by a long shot. Let's go to... I got so many clips here. See, the problem is I got all these clips. I have all these clips from the past that typically I wouldn't play. Wouldn't play these things because we're not in the business of dividing people. And I don't want to fall into the trap of giving people a reason to think that this anti-Semitism bill is good. On the other hand, if you're literally trying to make it illegal, oh yeah, by the way, sorry, part of this last one, allegations about Jews as such, or Jews, the power of Jews as collective, a world Jewish conspiracy, Jews controlling the media, economy, government, or other societal institutions. So they control the societal institutions and the government to enforce a definition of anti-Semitism law from the International Holocaust Remembrance Association. But you're not allowed to say it's global or that Jews control the societal organizations. So I guess we'll play some of these videos on the other side. Stay with us. The government's forcing my hand here. All right, welcome back, folks. So again, just to give you an idea of what the new law entails, making illegal now. You're not allowed to say things like... We're not allowed to justify the killing or harming of Jews. But, you know, it takes on a bit of a different cast when you're talking about Jews in the Israeli army going to war with, like, your family. It doesn't matter. You're not allowed to criticize them. You're not allowed to make any sort of stereotypical allegations about the Jews having international power or controlling societal institutions, like the Congress, to pass this law. Accusing Jews as a people of being responsible for real or imagined wrongdoings. And again, this is just review for people that watch our show. We've been telling you this, and we'll get into how far this really goes. This isn't about discrimination. This is about updating a discrimination rule. It's not even really about free speech laws alone. I mean, they're setting up entire systems, networks, making permanent offices inside the executive branch for Jewish inquisitors to coordinate with a network of agents and operatives in every federal branch to make sure that every aspect of our federal government is not just doing things to prevent people from speaking out against Jews or the state of Israel, but are proactively selling the story that undergirds why these claims are treated so differently. So you can't accuse Jews as a people of being responsible for real or imagined wrongdoings committed by a single Jewish person or group, or even acts committed by non-Jews, denying the fact, scope, mechanisms, e.g. gas chamber, or intentionality of the genocide of the Jewish people at the hands of the Nazis. So you can't question the Holocaust. You can't accuse the Jews of inventing or exaggerating the Holocaust. You can't accuse Jewish citizens of being more loyal to Israel or the alleged priorities of Jews worldwide than the interests of their own nations. So you're not allowed to say things like, you know, Jews care more about protecting their own group from criticism than the foundational morals of our nation and the First Amendment. That's a despicable claim, obviously. How they are pulling this off, you ask? Well, it's not really that complicated, and we'll go now to clip number 1 to explain it, or 21 to explain it, rather.
The American Israel Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC. If you haven't heard about them, you've been on Mars. AIPAC spends $2 to $3 million a year lobbying Congress on behalf of Israel and promoting Zionist causes. And it frequently writes legislation for Congress. The American Israel Education Foundation spends millions of dollars annually on paid trips to Israel for members of Congress. They're constantly taking members of Congress to Israel for the purpose of influencing them. The Anti-Defamation League, ADL, spends millions of dollars annually spying on Americans who are critical of Israel and uses massive amounts of money in smearing those people not deemed friendly to Israel. The mainstream media also promotes the Zionist agenda by accusing those on ADL lists as being anti-Semitic. The International Fellowship of Christian and Jews uses a $100 million annual revenue stream to promote Israel Zionism among evangelical Christians. The Central Fund of Israel uses a $20 million revenue stream promoting Israeli settlements in Palestine. Christians United for Israel, founded by John Hagee, run by a Jewish American attorney from Tel Aviv, David Brogue. Its lobbying arm is called CUFI Action Fund, headed by Gary Bauer, uses a $7 million annual budget to lobby members of Congress on behalf of Zionist causes. Hagee himself has given more than $80 million to Zionist causes in Israel. And then, if that's not enough in your spare time, you might want to check out the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, Simon Wiesenthal Center, Israel Project, Friends of Israeli Defense Forces, Women's Zionist Organizations.
Yeah, it goes on and on. We'll be right back. Yes, they've introduced an anti-Semitism bill that's so egregious that even the Daily Wire is outraged. Yeah, we've been warning about this and about this exact definition and the way it's being implemented. Well, it's already been implemented in South Dakota and Georgia and Florida and other states. At least 6 states around the nation have adopted this definition and are writing bills to limit your ability to speak freely on one particular topic. This one particular topic seems to be treated differently than any other topic. Part of the meta aspect of this is that pointing out that clear double standard would itself violate the strictures of the law. So just going through some more of these things that will now be illegal to say or to question. You can't question Jewish actions. You can't question the state of Israel. You can't question the Holocaust. You can't say that they exaggerate the Holocaust. You can't say that they exaggerate the Holocaust. You can't say that Jews exaggerate the Holocaust. Okay. Accusing Jewish citizens of being more loyal to Israel or to the alleged priorities of Jews worldwide than to the interest of their own nations, despite that being manifestly true for certain people. Denying the Jews. And again, this isn't about the statement Jews value, you know, their own in-group over the nation that they're in. Despite, again, that, I mean, kind of being like a definition of Judaism. But if you can find one person who clearly values and prioritizes the state of Israel over America, I mean, like Ben Shapiro, you can't criticize him. Like this applies to individuals, not the Jews as a whole. This is a speech law limiting your ability to criticize the stated position of individuals in this country. And we'll get why I personally feel so strong about this in just a second. It'll become clear as we go through this list again. Denying the Jewish people their right to self-determination, e.g. by claiming that the existence of the state of Israel is a racist endeavor. Denying the Jewish people their right to self-determination. So, translation, you're not allowed to criticize the racist endeavor of the state of Israel. You have to take a DNA test to prove that you're Jewish in order to get full citizenship, where there's an apartheid system that keeps Arabs and Palestinians from ever becoming full-fledged Israeli citizens in many cases, or force them to live in a place like Gaza or the West Bank under constant surveillance, being daily, you know, terrorized by the IDF. And again, we've talked about this before. I mean, it's almost, I'm glad people are waking up to this. I'm glad people are seeing, like, wait, this bill outlaws the gospel? What the hell? It's good. Yeah, you should be looking into this stuff. You should be looking into what all of this entails, what it contains, where it's going, right? Because this, like so many other things in this country, is a snowball rolling down a hill. I mean, once you're banning the ability to speak freely about what's going on, suddenly passing other laws that are more outrageous becomes that much easier, and anybody who's speaking out against it is subjected to the first laws that you passed. And this can be a feedback loop that can grow in intensity as it moves forward in time. So basically, the construct now that will be, according to the people that are writing this bill, they hope it'll be the status that every Western country is considered a racist endeavor because white people exist there as the native population, but that claiming Israel, the state created in 1948 by the Rothschilds to explicitly provide a homeland for European Jews who are not native to the state of Israel, you're not allowed to say that that is a racist endeavor. You're not allowed to say the thing about Israel that it's more or less mandatory to say about every Western country. That the desire for a homogenous population is an outgrowth of racism. You can't say that about Israel and Israel alone. Also made illegal, applying double standards by requiring of it a behavior not expected or demanded of any other democratic nation. Which again, it's just kind of funny to me, because obviously Israel is not held to the same standard of any other nation. And can you imagine if Russia was doing to Ukraine what Israel is doing to Gaza? I mean, it's beyond anything. So Israel's special. That's the point here. Israel is special. Not only is it good that they have racial laws and are a explicitly supremacist, you know, racially, ethnically supremacist nation, you're not allowed to criticize that. You're also not allowed to hold them to any standard, really. Everything they do is right and good, even when it flies in the face and is diametrically opposed to everything else expressed in the West. This is where it gets interesting. Using the symbols and images associated with classic anti-Semitism, e.g. claims of Jews killing Jesus or blood libel, to characterize Israel or Israelis. So yeah, laws preventing the criticism of a foreign state here in America, total destruction of the First Amendment. This is my favorite one. Drawing comparisons of contemporary Israeli policy to that of the Nazis. Or holding Jews collectively responsible for the actions of the state of Israel. Now, if you protest Israel, it will be soon. I mean, I've seen a lot of the protest videos. 99% of the things I'm seeing are just very explicitly opposed to Israel, opposed to the genocide going on. But see, this is the way it works. If you say that Israel is committing a genocide, if you say that they're acting like Nazis because they're racial supremacists with really ridiculous DNA laws and all sorts of other stuff that has never existed in the Western world outside of Nazi Germany, if you criticize Israel, then you it will be assumed, it will be considered that you are criticizing all Jews everywhere, while also making it illegal to hold Jews collectively responsible for the state of Israel. This is all just wordplay. It's just wordplay. It's just rhetorical trickery. It's not that complicated. But drawing comparisons of contemporary Israeli policy to that of the Nazis. Well, we don't have to go to Israel. The policy that I'm reading from is Nazi-esque in its implementation. It's laws against free speech. It's laws upholding the supremacy of one ideology over any other. And it makes it illegal to express a certain worldview. You switch the words, you know, anti-Semitism with Jewish, you know, the Jewish religion, and this is just a Nazi law. It's just a Nazi law. We were joking about it on Moonbase Live. Like, how are they going to enforce this? You're going to have people going around door to door. Are you hiding anti-Semites in the attic? We must go through your books. We've heard you have some forbidden literature that's anti-Semitic. You're hiding enemies of the state under your floorboards. Heard you have anti-Semites there. I mean, and there's the thing. I don't like Nazis because they're anti-free speech, because they don't believe in the things that Americans believe in, because their actions and their policies are at odds with what we in America and most of Western Europe have decided are the, you know, ultimate characteristics of our nation. I'm against Nazis for the same reason I'm against whatever this is. And yet making that comparison alone would be in violation of this statute, which means the statute is bad and wrong. Even Matt Walsh is pointing this out. The vast majority of Republicans just voted for a bill to criminalize criticism of the Israeli government. If the bill passes, you will be guilty of hate speech if you apply double standards to the government of Israel or accuse it of genocide. This is honestly one of the most insane pieces of legislation I've ever seen. Somebody responds to him saying, no, that's not true. It's just for anti-Semitism. It's all the violent speech. It's just criticizing. It's just making legal violent speech. Matt Walsh responds, that's not true. The bill explicitly includes, as its definition, the examples provided by the IHRA. That is the International Holocaust Remembrance Association. Or perhaps more accurately put, the Global Jewish Thought Police. That might be a way of putting it. Those examples include criticism of the Israeli government. Left is the text of the bill. Right are examples they refer to. The bill absolutely would criminalize criticisms of the Israeli government. It's right there in plain text. So we've already showed a video talking about how they got this through using their just massive, almost unimaginably huge and well-funded influence networks. Of course, all this is predicated on the protests going on campus, where you have people like George Soros, Alexander Soros, and other Jewish organizations funding Palestinian protests. And then you have the Jewish community responding in outrage, causing major violence and attacking the protesters. And then that provides the justification for these free speech laws. But this is nothing new. I want to go to a very much older clip. It's one of these clips that I had it in my folder probably 3 days ago. Again, I'm not interested in dividing people. I'm not interested in, you know, conversations that set Americans at odds with one another. But now that they're telling me it's illegal to do this, I feel an obligation to my principles to delve into things that I would otherwise avoid. So let's go now to clip 22 here. As the question is asked about how it keeps happening, you have these major societal conflicts, both sides of which happen to be run by Jews. Let's watch.
Professor Levin, it seems to me that Jewish individuals own a lot of the media and fund a lot of the politicians that made demands on behalf of the black community for things like reparations, while another group of Jewish individuals tend to take the intellectual lead in combating the initiatives that was proposed by this first group, and the result being that black workers and white workers end up fighting each other while Jewish individuals assume leadership and profit from the situation. How do you feel your remarks fit into that?
Well, apart from profiting from the situation, I think you're largely right. I don't think that the Jewish leadership on either side particularly profits. I think they're doing what they are convinced is correct. My own view, frankly, is that Jews tend to take the lead, the intellectual lead in most movements. Jews tend to take the lead, the intellectual lead in most movements where it's possible. And so it's not surprising that the Jews would be articulating the case for reparations, and Jews would be articulating
the
case.
Take the lead in issues they create. I mean, and the issue didn't exist until it was created by Jewish individuals.
Well, very well. I'm inclined to agree. I'd say take the lead in civil rights, generally speaking, take the lead in opposing them.
Oh, in creating issues and dividing people. It's...
Well, I'll speak to Steven Spielberg about it and see what I can do.
Yeah. I'll speak to Steven Spielberg about it. Nobody's claiming that all Jews like know each other, that they're, you know, working in concert with this goal deliberately in mind. I've heard that same thing, you know, constantly, where it's like obviously, and I should really just do this with nothing but like quotes from Jewish people, because, you know, there's the celebration parallax where like the Jerusalem Times or, you know, Jerusalem Post write something that's just like, yeah, the Jews run Hollywood because we're so successful and smart. And it's like, okay, but if you say Jews run Hollywood and it's not good, then you're a horrible anti-Semite Nazi. You're saying the exact same thing. So, I mean, it's not actually, you know, controversial to say that Jews have basically a controlling stake in the mainstream media in this country. Does that mean that Jewish person working next to you in a cubicle has influence on Hollywood? No, obviously not. But that's not what anybody's saying. That's sort of a good classic, I guess, deflection from what this guy said. And I think, you know, he's talking about the civil rights movement there, where it's applicable, but I think it's much more applicable to what's going on college campuses right now. Where you've got Jewish authorities on controlling both sides of the divide, and the end is that we get our rights taken away. But, you know, where this goes is legitimately insane, and I've talked about this many, many times on the show, but since people are sort of first, you know, waking up to this and realizing how far some of these rules go, actually criminalizing the gospel. It's not an overstatement. It's actually what it does. The Christian Bible says the Jews killed Jesus. Christian Bible says the synagogue of Satan. Christian Bible says things that would be illegal under this bill. And if that's the bridge too far, if that's the thing that's, you know, causing people to wake up to this, great. But you really got to look into what else is being put into place. We've covered this story many times, but I don't understand how it hasn't gotten more attention from Jerusalem Post. Anti-Semitism must be criminalized before it's too late, where they discuss a bill that's been put forward in draft form to the UN to criminalize anti-Semitism on the same level as war crimes and genocide. in which the UN will impanel a body to be a permanent international monitoring group with the purpose of eradicating anti-Semitism worldwide. Saying things like, the international community as a whole has never considered criminalizing anti-Semitism in a manner similar to the criminalization of other odious phenomena such as genocide, racial discrimination, piracy, hostage-taking, crimes against humanity, war crimes, and terrorism. One might have suspected that over the years some effort would have been made by the international community to criminalize and declare anti-Semitism to be an international crime with a view to ensuring its perpetrators, inciters, and all those involved in it would be dealt with as international criminals and would not enjoy impunity. So listen, this just can't be allowed to continue. This can't be allowed to continue. And whatever we need to do to prevent people from being suckered into this is what we're going to have to do. They are creating an international network of inquisitors. They are embedding agents in every branch of the federal government to ensure that those branches not only do not house or support or contain anybody with any thoughts that are against the interests of the Jewish people, but actively or proactively supporting the narratives that undergird these concepts. The international community has recently become open to the concept of extending universal criminal jurisdiction in order to counter impunity through the establishment of temporary international criminal tribunals to deal with atrocities committed in specific regional conflicts. So, I mean, the bill going through now is bad. It changes the definition of anti-Semitism to include all of these things. There's just criticizing Israel or criticizing Jews for the crimes they commit. You know, this is bad enough. No, they're talking about creating an international criminal court that will prosecute thought crime like it's a crime against humanity, but only one specific type, that against Jews. And this clearly international capture of our institutions itself, the discussion of that phenomenon will fall under the label of anti-Semitism and be prosecuted like a war crime. And of course, this relies on this international definition of anti-Semitism, states would be required to criminalize anti-Semitism in their own domestic legislation and cooperate and exchange information on perpetrators and actions taken to prosecute and extradite them. The draft calls for the formation of national and international education programs to combat anti-Semitism, as well as the establishment of an international anti-Semitism monitoring forum for coordinating actions by states and international organizations. So a superstructure above the UN and every national government that will force those local and national governments to serve as the thought police for the international Jewish groups. And of course, America is already ahead of the curve on this. Joe Biden has already signed on to the Countering Anti-Semitism Act, which will create a permanent office inside the White House, an executive branch administrative office, to coordinate agents in every federal agency. Coordinator would serve as the president's key advisor to counter domestic anti-Semitism and would chair a new task force to coordinate the implementation of the plan across agencies. The legislation would require federal agencies to submit a report to Congress detailing the implementation of the strategy, enabling oversight authorities to identify and recommend new, better ways to counter the spread of anti-Semitism, including online. It would specifically direct the FBI, Department of Homeland Security, and the National Counterterrorism Center to produce an annual threat assessment of violent extremism directed at Jews. Any other group of people, any other religion, any other ethnicity This would be seen as exactly what it is, because there's been 70 years of programming behind this. People, for some reason, can't see this for what it is, which is a Nazi-style takeover of the entire federal government, as their overriding priority will be turned to protecting the Jews. Pretty simple, actually. All right, folks, I think I'll wait until the next segment to play that CIA, the undercover CIA video, because it is very important, and we got to get into that. But I was just revisiting, you know, this list of things that'll be made illegal by changing this definition of anti-Semitism and establishing offices in every branch of the federal government to uphold this definition. I know, it's so cheesy. It's so, like, typical, this whole, like, well, just replace the word Jews with white and see how you feel about this. But it does illustrate where we are at this point. Because all of these things are absolutely fulfilled when it comes to white people. Not so much Jews. Again, you know, this is all being predicated on an anti-war protest, peace protest, calling for the end to aid to Israel as they carry out a genocide against Gaza. So that's not hateful. That's not anti-Semitic. It's a geopolitical situation that people are outraged at. And their opposition to this is considered anti-Semitism regardless of the way that they frame it. And practically everything I've seen from the protest, you know, they go off the rails sometimes, right? We've shown the videos of them talking about a global infatada and infatada, is that the right word? Sounds like a Mexican dish. The enchilada, global enchilada. They go off the rails sometimes, admittedly. But the vast majority I've just seen is Israel is committing genocide. We need to, you know, stop supporting this apartheid nation. You know, none of these things fulfill, by definition, or, you know, the letter of the law when it comes to these claims. But they are considered that. Intifada, that's one. The intifada. I'm going to say. Did it sound like a taco when I said it? But if you read this, you know, calling for, aiding, or justifying the killing or harming of white people in the name of radical ideology or extremist view of race, making mendacious, dehumanizing, demonizing, or stereotypical allegations about whites as such, or the power of whites as a collective, such as, especially but not exclusively, the myth about white privilege, or whites controlling the economy, government, or other societal institutions, accusing whites as a people of being responsible for real or imagined wrongdoings committed by a single white person or group, or even acts committed by non-whites, denying the fact scope mechanisms, e.g., well, we don't have the Holocaust, so accusing whites as a people or America as a state of inventing or exaggerating Holocaust, accusing Jewish citizens of, so, I mean, any of these things, if you were to, you know, replace it with the word white people, the vast majority of white people would be appalled at this concept. I mean, we rage continuously against the outright, open, forthright abuse that white people face in the rhetoric of the academics or the mainstream media or their champions. You can find book after book after book after book about why white people are evil, why whiteness needs to be destroyed, why the white race is tainted. I mean, it's like entire sections in Barnes & Noble where these books are on display. Just a little unfair. But this is the thing, is that if you were to ask me, okay, you know, we hate this anti-white crap. Should we make a law saying that you can't criticize white people? Should we make a law making it illegal to bring up the fact that white people once owned non-white slaves? And the answer would obviously be no. No, you don't make that illegal. I want people just to realize that's not good to align with the hateful people. And white people actually receive real, legitimate, forthright, just in-your-face hate in this country. Constantly. And it's pathetic that white people are browbeaten by this. Like, instead of being offended and outraged by these things set against you and your family and your ancestors and the beautiful countries you built, white people actually feel bad about it. They're like, oh man, that is my fault. It's like, so I just want people to wake up to this. I just want people to not stand for it. But we would never suggest that laws should be put into place to stop this. So that's why I feel like I have to say all this stuff. I have to point out the Jewish control of our government. And if you're a Jewish person out there that feels personally attacked by this, that's on you. That's entirely on you. We've had to deal with it for decades, and no matter how egregious and overwrought the attacks against white people are, we've always maintained that the principles of free speech are more important than our feelings. And if you can't agree with that because it's your ethnic group that's being targeted now, what am I supposed to say? So again, let's go to another video that I wasn't going to play. I mean, I had it yesterday. But I figure since we're on the topic, let's watch this video called Based Chinese Guy Reads a Selection of Anti-White Material. Here's him quoting famous and well-respected and highly regarded Jews talking about the white race, including the Harvard professor who runs the Getting Rid of Whiteness course. Yeah, it's called Based Chinese Guy Reads a Selection. All right. So this is the actual hate that white people have been subjected to by highly influential and respected Jews in the recent past. Let's watch.
White race is the cancer of human history. It is the white race and it alone, its ideologies and inventions, which eradicates autonomous civilization wherever it spreads, which has upset the ecological balance of the planet, which now threatens the very existence of life itself. If white men were not complaining, it would be an indication we weren't succeeding and making the inroads that we are. The goal of abolishing the white race is on its face so desirable that some may find it hard to believe that it could incur any opposition other than from committed white supremacists. Make no mistake about it, we intend to keep bashing the dead white males and the live ones, and the females too, until the social construct known as the white race is destroyed. Not deconstructed, but destroyed.
Professor.
It is in the Jewish interest, it is in humanity's interest that whites experience a genocide. Until white children are burned alive, white women raped, mutilated, murdered, and all white men who have not been slaughtered watch powerlessly as their people are terrorized, only then will mankind be on a more equal footing, ready to discuss white privilege and the apparent chip on the shoulder that minorities have. You white people are on an endangered list, and unlike, say, the bald eagle or some exotic species of muskrat, you are not worth saving. In 40 years or so, maybe fewer, there won't be any more white people around, and that's a good thing. Goyim were born only to serve us. Without that, they have no place in the world, only to serve the people of Israel. Why are Gentiles needed? They will work, they will plow, they will reap. We will sit like an effendi and eat. And go on and on.
But if you say the Jews killed Jesus, yeah, you're hateful, and that's against the law. Again, we got hours of this stuff if we want to get into it. We'll take your calls on this topic in the next hour. We're going to show the video from the CIA here on the other side. My point here is a simple one. Free speech. Free speech. It's the American way. Sometimes you have to be offended. But it's worth it because the threat of getting rid of free speech to protect your offense is the threat of surrendering your ability to have any say in the direction of our government at all. So free speech is paramount. And if they're going to outlaw anti-Semitism, we got to do something. going to take your calls on this topic for the last hour. And I want to see if we get any calls with this prompt. I really only want you to call in if you disagree with me. We'll see if anybody calls in. I don't know at this point. But if you think this was a good thing, if you think passing this anti-Semitism law is good, if you think it's being blown out of proportion, if you think that college protesters protesting our participation in support of a genocidal state is worth getting rid of the First Amendment, give us a call. I really want to know. We might not get any calls. If we don't get any calls, I'll you know, open up the phone lines to everybody in the next hour. But for now, I really want to see, does anybody out there think this is a good thing? Give us a call, 1-877-789-2539, 1-877-789-2539. If you are in support of this law, I really need to hear from you. I really need to know your justification for this, 1-877-789-2539. Again, this whole thing just honestly just makes me sad. It just makes me sad that because I also know, I know how it goes. I know the playbook, right? Pass a law outlawing anti-Semitism, by which they mean created the Jewish Inquisition, where our government's sole and overriding purpose will be the protection of this one particular ethnic group. And then the response, obviously, of people that actually believe in free speech, that actually refuse to bow. And even at this point, I've explained it before, like somebody, if I'm not going to do something, and then somebody goes, if you do this thing, I'm going to hurt you. It's like, well, now I got to do the thing. I wasn't going to, but now if I don't, it's going to be like you won. It's going to be like you intimidated me. Even though I wasn't going to do the thing in the first place, the instant you try to stop me, I have to do the thing now. And so, of course, what's going to happen is they're going to say anti-Semitism is illegal. I'm going to say, well, if it's illegal, now I have to say it. I'm going to say it, and then they're going to point to that statement and go, see, we told you he's anti-Semitic. No, I don't want to divide anybody. I don't judge people by the groups they were born into. I love my Jewish friends and neighbors. This is unacceptable, and it has to stop, and it's incumbent on Jews out there to stand up against this and not let censorious control freaks use you and your familial horror stories as an excuse to crush the First Amendment. And if that's the way it's going to be, then all these videos that I don't play are going to get played. All these stories I don't really talk about because I'm focused on uniting humanity in opposition to the evil people of every race, color, and creed that are using our psychological weakness as a tool to impose control. I'm just going to have to do it. Just going to have to do it. Sucks. But these are the options we're left with. Stand up to this and get called an anti-Semite, or bow to it and lose our civilization. So we'll move on now. We'll see if we're getting any calls. We can bring up the call screen, guys. If we get any calls, I'm happy to go to them because I understand where I'm coming from. We are actually getting, no, see, people are going to call in saying that they're against me, and then they're just going to talk about the Talmud. I know how it goes. All right. We're going to move on now to this mega bombshell story from Infowars.com. That's the headline. CIA official confesses to deep state coup against Trump and the American people. Representative Matt Gaetz has called for an immediate investigation into James O'Keefe bombshell video report. We'll go now to that video report and discuss it. On the other side, the whole thing is very long. It's like 30 minutes or something. So we're just going to show the first 5 minutes, but you get a pretty good taste of what the CIA is up to. Let's watch.
network and the intelligence community.
So, yeah. I work at the CIA.
I do cyber operations. I've been doing it for a long time.
So how long have you been working at the CIA?
2008.
Okay.
I've also worked at NSA, too. And then I had a TSSCI with a full scope polygraph. That means that I'm fully vetted.
Amjad Fasisi shows her his CIA identification badge.
No, where does it say?
Does it?
Hey, that's the point.
That's the point.
What's CMC?
Timeline Mission Center, darling. That's my mission center.
Gotcha.
Amjad talks about how the CIA kept information from Trump.
Not working.
We kept information from him.
Say one more time.
We kept information from him.
From Trump?
Yes. He's an idiot. And there are certain people that would give him a high level of overview, but never give it to me. You know, do you know why? It's called leak those details.
Amjad Fasisi states a higher ups within the intel community, including CIA directors Mike Pompeo and Gina Haspel, and the upper levels of their staffs colluded to withhold information from sitting President Trump.
So the agencies kind of like all got together and said, we're not going to tell Trump.
The higher ups.
The higher ups.
Put it this way, the executive staff, within about the director and his subordinates.
Like what titles are they?
Director of the CIA.
Director of the CIA would keep.
Yes.
Are you guys still watching him?
I would say yes.
It sounds like you guys are still watching him and his team.
Of course we are. Nothing goes by without somebody watching.
Amjad Fasisi also states as fact that Trump is under constant surveillance and even claims they are spying on his ex-wife.
And we also have people that monitor his ex-wife.
So you guys had human sources.
How do you think we get information?
Like wiretapping? How did you guys figure out that Trump was colluding with the Russians? Did you guys use
human intelligence?
So the intel community was able to use FISA to spy on Trump and his team. And that's how we found out that he was colluding with the Russians. Was it the CIA or the NSA that spied on Trump?
So it should be all of them.
So you're saying that your agency,
the CIA. A lot of the agencies, he's not going to get it. I'll re-elected again. I've done the math. It's impossible. We have a choice here. Do we want our democracy or do we want some madman? Yeah. He wants to be a dictator.
Does it say the CIA on your LinkedIn?
No. We can't do that. And then I worked at NSA for a year.
Okay.
And I was doing some really cool cyber stuff, which I cannot tell you about. Through the Office of Director of National Intelligence. So I helped them stand their insider threat program. They trusted me to set that up.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
I don't have anyone to tell.
Yeah, yeah. This conversation didn't happen tonight.
Of course.
I get extremely denied.
Yeah.
Inside the CIA, O'Keefe Media Group presents Inside the CIA.
I'm James O'Keefe reporting on location outside the CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia. Right behind me, the CIA, the police officers here.
We figured we'd come up and just say hello.
No problem. We're allowed to stand here?
100%.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everything you guys are doing is 100% okay from where you're at right now.
Okay.
If we proceed forward of the crosswalk, that's where we may have to come up and have another discussion.
Yeah, we're going to stand right on the sidewalk.
100%. Absolutely.
Okay. I appreciate it. All right. Very good. Thank you. Just a moment ago, officers coming out from Langley, Virginia to warn me not to set foot across that line right there. It's obviously dangerous for us to be here. It's dangerous for us to do this reporting. But thanks to a brave OMG undercover swiper, we present to you the O'Keefe Media Group blockbuster investigation inside the CIA. A few months ago, journalists Matt Taibbi and Michael Schellenberger released a story making several claims, including the CIA illegally mobilizing foreign intelligence agencies to target Trump advisors before the 2016 election. Barack Obama's CIA director, John Brennan, identified 26 Trump associates for the intelligence community to target and bump, make contact with, or manipulate. And what bumping means is literally bumping into people, making contact with them, communicating with them, and spreading misinformation to divert their attention. The U.S. intelligence community also asked its foreign allies, United Kingdom, Australia, Italy, and the Israeli Mossad, to target these 26 members of Trump's team going all the way back to March of 2016,
well before the 2016 presidential election. Multiple instances that the U.S. intelligence officials likely broke laws against spying and election interference. Former CIA Director Gina Haspel blocked the release of a binder that included evidence that may have identified her role in the Trump-Russia collusion hoax. This activity was illegal, both because U.S. law prohibits such intelligence gathering unless authorized by a foreign intelligence surveillance act.
We actually got some callers who disagree with me, so we'll go to them on the other side. That's James O'Keefe doing his incredible work. Find the story at Infowars.com, CIA destroying democracy to save democracy. Yeah.
James Rogusky on Substack has been reporting on the so-called WHO pandemic treaty and its history. He has shown that its entire history is fraudulent and relies upon the people's silence. On June 14, 1948, President Truman signed a joint resolution to sign onto the WHO Constitution. Section 2 states that 3 U.S. delegates would be chosen by the president and confirmed by the U.S. Senate. But the Biden administration has sent U.S. delegates who have not been confirmed, which makes them fraudulent. Section 5 states that in adopting this joint resolution, the Congress does so with the understanding that nothing in the Constitution of the World Health Organization in any manner commits the United States to enact any specific legislation program regarding any matters referred to in said Constitution. And so the U.S. is not lawfully compelled by the WHO. On July 25, 1969, the 22nd Annual World Health Assembly adopted the International Health Regulations to ensure the maximum security against the international spread of diseases, but did so without a Senate vote.
The way they did that was with what they call the silence procedure. A bunch of unnamed bureaucrats agreed to that document. They gave a 9-month period for the leaders of all of the parties to reject it. And if no one rejected it on the first day of January 1971, it became legally binding. So any amendments go by that same adoption procedure. So in 2005, they made substantial changes. And for the last 18 or 19 years, we've been working off of the international health regulations as they were amended in 2005. I challenge anybody to look through the Federal Register or the Senate records to see if the Senate has ever given their consent, you know, two-thirds, either in 1948, 1969, 2005, or in 2022.
On September 30th of 2022, 94 nations submitted more than 300 proposed amendments to the pandemic treaty. These documents were withheld from the public. And when James Rogusky acquired copies, he discovered the reason for this was that the disputes were all based upon corrupt world leaders of smaller nations wanting a bigger piece of the action from the U.S. after realizing the billions of dollars being made by pharmaceutical companies.
This is organized crime, and the big crime bosses are being faced by a bunch of little crime bosses who want in on the deal. They want to be able to manufacture the drugs and jabs in country so that they can control it and, you know, inflict it upon their own population while basically profiting from the next pandemic.
And the proposed amendments to the 2005 IHR will bring this tyranny to its full potential. They want to create an international health regulations authority. They want the authority to declare a pandemic based on the mere potential for disease. They want the authority to compel new vaccines and quarantine for those who are not even sick. And they want to authorize surveillance and censorship to enforce their fraud. They also want to give nations the authority to quarantine and vaccinate foreign travelers at their own discretion.
They want to add strengthening language to enable nations to quarantine international travelers as appropriate. That is not an attack on national sovereignty. That is a ridiculous strengthening of national sovereignty that would enable each nation to abuse the rights and freedoms of foreign travelers. The local tyrants that abused your rights over the last 4.5 years didn't need any amendments or didn't need any treaty to do what they did over the last 4.5 years. So the core battle is still local.
You can find these documents at stopthetreaty.org and rejecttheamendments.com. They view our silence as consent, so we must stand against them and speak out. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
We have opened up the phone lines for people who disagree with me that actually think that this new bill passed through the House of Congress yesterday and is now headed to the Senate is a good thing. House Bill 6090, and it looks like we actually have some people who want to argue this. TJ is here in Austin. Go ahead, TJ, you're on the air.
Yeah, so it's just the definition of what anti-Semitism is.
Hold on. I'm having trouble hearing you, TJ. If you could, I don't know if I'm on speakerphone or something, just make sure you're talking right into the phone so I can actually hear you. Sorry.
Yeah, no problem. So it is, so we're looking at a change in just what anti-Semitism is defined. And so this is only going to come into play when somebody is charged with having hate speech. You know, it doesn't mean that there's going to be churches rounded up and crosses taken down, and that's ridiculous. Also, the very last page says that this is not going to infringe upon the First Amendment.
Well, as long as they say that, then I'm sure we can trust them. No, that's a straw man. I never said that they'd be tearing crosses down and rounding up church members. That's eventually where we'll go if we don't put a stop to this here now. But that's a total straw man. Ridiculous. I never said that. It's
ridiculous.
How's that ridiculous?
And Matt Gaetz was saying under the reading of this, then all of these different Bible verses or things in the Bible are going to be considered anti-Semitism and hate speech, and that's patently false and patently ridiculous.
How is that patently false or patently ridiculous? It changes the definition of anti-Semitism to comport with the International Holocaust Remembrance Association, which lists claims that Jews killed Jesus as one of the signifiers of anti-Semitism. So how is that ridiculous?
And it only comes into play when somebody is being charged with a crime that uses hate speech.
It's a hate speech law. It is a law against certain type of speech. That's what we don't like.
It's not against certain type of speech. Hate speech is already illegal.
No, it's not.
It's absolutely not. Okay.
How is hate speech illegal?
Well, I'm away from my computer right now, so I can't Google it fast enough. But right now, this is not making anything specifically illegal. This is defining specifically what anti-Semitism is. But if hate speech was illegal, if it was illegal to spout hate speech, you guys would have been gone a long time ago. And that's what it is.
Right, and that's what you want, right? You want censorship, you want certain type of speech to be illegal, and you want people who say certain things to be kicked off the air or imprisoned, right? I mean, it's not that you disagree with me about what the bill says. You disagree with me because you think it's a good thing.
No, not at all. I don't disagree with you that because I think it's a good thing. I'm not even saying that it is a good thing, but I am disagreeing with you that in your statements are not true.
My problem is that
I may be mistaken in my full reading of what hate speech is and
not
how
just a
it
basic,
comes
it's
into
just
play.
A basic
However,
understanding. We have the First Amendment and speech, no matter how offensive it is, no matter how hateful it is, it's still speech. You get that, right, TJ? That speech is speech. We need to go back to the basics here.
That's great. But there is some speech. There is some speech that is that gets people in trouble, like when you cross the line into defamation and libel.
That's
when
speech.
We get to That no, it's not. I'm changing subjects. I'm going over to the CIA.
You were
thing.
Wrong about the hate speech thing.
No, yeah. I don't.
No, you were though.
I would say that I'm wrong in saying that hate speech is illegal, and I'm happy to concede that if that is the case.
Great, wonderful.
I will certainly concede that. Would you mind talking about the CIA thing real quick?
No, I want to talk about this bill and the fact that they're now adopting a definition of anti-Semitism that includes criticism of the state of Israel or claims that are made in the gospel in the Bible. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you seem fine with that and how troubling
it
that is.
Say that, though. But it doesn't
it does.
Say that.
No,
still.
But it does, though, it actually. Doesn't. What do you mean it doesn't? What do you mean? They're adopting the IHRA's definition of anti-Semitism. Their definition of anti-Semitism includes criticizing the state of Israel or claims that Jews killed Jesus, which is a claim made in the gospel. How am I wrong?
Okay. Well, here's the thing. And so if we're just recognizing it as hate speech, and hate speech is completely legal, then what's the problem?
The problem is that they are establishing offices in our executive branch permanently that will coordinate with a network of operatives in every branch of the federal government to ensure that criticism of Jews is not allowed in any, you know, federal institution. That's the problem.
It would be good if in any of our institutions we don't criticize any race or religion in a manner that is congruent with what we would call hate speech.
So would you be in favor of a bill that added anti-whiteism to discrimination and included a definition that encompassed claims that white people owned non-white slaves, something like that? Would that would be a good thing to base discrimination law
on? That's talking about a reality.
It's a reality that certain Jews commit crimes and sometimes Jews get together, as a collective, do things for their own interest.
A Jewish person might commit a crime. Multiple Jewish people might get together and do something together. However, what your outlet claims is that there is a cabal of a global cabal of Jewish persons that are out to destroy the world and suck our lives out and take all of our money. And it's just a ridiculous notion. And
so it should be illegal to say that?
I didn't say it should be illegal to say that.
No, the bill does. No, this bill is what says that's illegal to say.
The bill doesn't say that it's illegal to say it. The bill says this is how we're going to define anti-Semitism.
Right, and they're writing a law to make this actionable in federal.
The bill is a law, uh-huh. and in it says this is how we define anti-Semitism. That's it.
Oh, that's all. That's it.
And we're going to define anti-Semitism so that it doesn't
so it includes criticism of a foreign nation,
the First Amendment, and so that it doesn't interfere with the First Amendment.
Except if you criticize the state of Israel, or if you criticize Jewish groups having overwrought power, or Jewish influence networks taking control of our institutions, and these things you're not going to be allowed to say, or else you might be charged with discrimination of some sort.
But nobody has said that yet. And also, if there is a constitutional challenge to this, it'll go to the Supreme Court, just like this silly presidential immunity thing has.
Right.
And
so,
and the Supreme Court that is
so
largely conservative
okay. I want to know. Would you be in favor of this bill if we just replaced anti-Semitism with anti-whitism and you replace the definition of anti-Semitism just like I was doing before, where, you know, you've got these claims that are made about white people And that these would now be the definition of anti-whiteism, and now anti-whiteism will be incorporated into the 1964 Civil Rights Act as being something that if you violate, will put you in violation of the Civil Rights Act. I mean, would you be in favor of the same thing for white people?
If white people had been having to deal with this for centuries, perhaps.
You think people haven't hated white people for centuries?
Well, if you want to say they have, then you're saying they. Then you have to admit that the reason why they might have hated white people is because they were keeping them as slaves.
Oh, you know, so it's the actions of the white people that justify the criticism of them.
Perhaps centuries ago, yeah.
Mm. So if you predicate your criticism of Jews on the actions of the Jews, how is that any different?
Because it's not the action of the Jews. It's the action of the white people,
we're talking about white people.
Well,
I'm saying your own words back to you, TJ.
And when we're talking about hate against white people,
they deserve it because they did the bad things.
This is all manufactured stuff. I'm saying that an individual might have issue with a white person, and you know, depending on nature and nurture, could develop an opinion against all white people until they see otherwise.
Same thing for Jews.
Certainly, yes. Right. People who grow up listening to white supremacist stuff and listening to anti-Semitic things and listening to the American Journal and InfoWars might pick up a hate against Jews and might keep that in their minds until they find out that they're wrong.
Okay. Well, what does any of that mean?
It means that InfoWars and the American Journal and the War Room are hosted by liars that are simply up here fomenting anger in order to sell Vaso beats so that people can have painful erections.
You got us. You got us. That's our attempt. All right.
Hey, Alex says it gives them painful erections yesterday.
Yeah, no, that's the point. That is certainly the point. So I'm honestly confused by this. You didn't really answer my question. So if this was the same thing but for anti-whiteism, you're not for that because white people did things bad in the past and need to be treated as a collective. They don't deserve collective protection from speech in the same way that Jews do. Is that your argument?
I take your question because your question is specious. It's a false equivalency.
It is. There's no equivalency between anti-Semitism and anti-whiteism.
Correct.
Okay. Why?
Well, anti-Semitism resulted in 6 million Jews being killed.
20 million Germans. 20 million Russians.
That wasn't the result of anti-Semitism. That was the result. That was just things that happened during a conflict between those two powers, other powers. But the
Holocaust not something that happened during a conflict between world powers?
So was anti-Semitism the only reason why Hitler was invading Russia?
It's probably a pretty big one. I mean, what was the reason Russia became communist in the first place, and what happened after the communist revolution? How many white people were killed, and who was in charge in that situation?
Well, you know, when you're in a situation where most people are white, and then you know, and you're killing people, then a lot of white people are going to get killed. But we're getting way off topic.
This is actually the topic. One of the contingents of the definition of anti-Semitism is you're not allowed to distort or say that the Holocaust is exaggerated. I mean, this is all, you know, perfectly in this. So again, you're in favor of a bill that criminalizes discussion about a historical topic when it comes to Jews, but not if white people are the demonized group in this situation. I'm just pointing out that you hold a basic inconsistency in your belief based on who it is that's being affected. My point is that we have laws that apply to everyone equally because this is America and we don't give preferential treatment to, or we shouldn't give preferential treatment to particular groups, ethnicities, or, you know, races certainly, but religious groups as well. I mean, that is a violation of the First Amendment, right?
What about people who need a ramp in order to get on the sidewalk because they have a wheelchair? Do we not have laws in order to give them preferential treatment and put a ramp on every corner? Should we go out and rip out all of these ramps so that we don't get anybody any preferential treatment?
You're flailing, bro. You're flailing. You've completely
not
lost the plot.
We're talking about
the anti-Semitism laws. We're talking about making certain speech illegal in America.
Yes, you're in favor of that because you consider it hateful. We're talking about anti-Semitism laws, and you keep bringing up, hey, what about anti-white? You're the guy who says, why isn't there a National White History Month? You're the guy that says, why don't I have the Association for the Advancement of White People? I'm not saying specifically that you have uttered these particular words. However, those are the sort of arguments that you're making, and it's silly.
Oh, it's silly. It's silly.
Yes, it's silly. And honestly, it's hateful. I mean,
white people uniquely do not deserve protection or anybody speaking up for them or having their issues treated as collective.
No.
That's exclusive.
No,
white people are the ones that shouldn't get that.
Because these statements are arguments that have been put forward specifically by white nationalists and by white supremacists.
And that's evil. Wait, hold on. Let's just establish. Is it illegal? Or, I mean, is it immoral? Is it a bad thing for a country to have an ethnic component that they see as superlative and paramount, that they, you know, make laws to guarantee that a single ethnicity, like, you know, white people, maintain their majority in a country? You're against that. White nationalists, you use that as a pejorative. That's the definition, right? Is ethnic supremacy in a country, ethnic majority to be maintained continuously? That's bad when it's white people,
well,
right?
I'm certainly not going to get into a moment where you say, well, that's what Israel is doing.
Yeah, you know, I know that I'm right.
Yeah,
yeah, I know.
Hey,
you don't want to get into that, do you? Because I'm right.
I don't agree at all with what Israel is doing. I don't believe that Israel should be occupying Palestine. I don't believe that they should be settling settlements.
Well,
I don't believe
maybe you should oppose the law that would make it illegal for you to say that, TJ. If you believe that, maybe you shouldn't be. Yes, it does.
It
incorporates a definition of anti-Semitism. One of the definitions of anti-Semitism includes claiming that Israel is, uniquely is a racial superiority. I mean, we can read the actual thing here. If I can go ahead and pull it up,
I would encourage you to read the entire thing after.
The bill's six pages. I've read the whole thing. Have you?
No, not the bill. The IH. Yeah, I did. I read it before I called. That way I knew what was going on. Now the IHAR or whatever the heck it is, I haven't read that.
Maybe you should, TJ, because some of the things that you believe are in violation of their definition. So why would you be in favor of adopting a definition of hate speech that includes things that you believe? You think it's bad that Israel maintains their ethnic majority of Judaism, but you're in favor of a free speech law that would consider that to be anti-Semitism, therefore hate speech, therefore illegal in certain regards?
Well, I have faith in the United States and that if there are things in that definition that are distinctly contrary to our American values, the First Amendment,
yes,
that we will make amendments to this bill or it won't pass.
So you're in favor of the bill on the assumption that it gets overturned by the Supreme Court later? You realize how stupid that is?
It hasn't even passed the Senate yet, and that's what I'm saying. I'm saying it likely won't even pass the Senate. If your arguments are true and forthright, then there's probably not a likelihood that it will pass the Senate.
This is something liberals do all the time. It's like you act like the fact that they're trying to do this, the fact that it's already passed the House of Congress, the fact that they're actually trying to curtail the First Amendment by giving one certain ethnic group a preferential treatment, that's all fine because it hasn't really been totally finished yet. That we shouldn't resist it before it's implemented. You should let it be implemented first on the assumption that it gets overturned later. I mean, why? Why would you not just say this is bad now, TJ?
I would much rather us have an actual definition of anti-Semitism rather than go the whole "I know porn when I see it" route and have every single instance of anti-Semitism that has to be looked at go and pass the smell test to determine whether or not it was anti-Semitic enough in order to have any kind of hate crime modifier placed on top of the actions that somebody is being charged for having committed.
Okay, all right, you're just sort of rambling now. Here's what one of the definitions of anti-Semitism. Calm down, TJ. Here's what one of the definitions of anti-Semitism published by the IHRA says: denying the Jewish people their right to self-determination exempla gratis, e.g., by claiming the existence of the State of Israel is a racist endeavor. So, I mean, you said that it's a bad thing that Israel has, you know, apartheid laws and racist laws. So you would be now in violation of that and subject to hate speech restrictions. But you're in favor of that because one day the Supreme Court will undo it.
Here's what would happen is if I was shouting Israel can't, Israel shouldn't be doing this, Israel should let Gaza free while I was beating someone.
No, beating somebody is already illegal. There's already hate crimes based on people's immutable aspects. This is about speech. It's making certain types of speech off limits and creating an entire, federal superstructure to ensure this. Thanks, TJ. Thanks for the call. I mean, I don't know. You're just wrong. President Joe Biden has currently just made a statement. I understand the video's 3 minutes long. Was that the entirety of his comments? Wow. He setting new records for stamina. Solid 3-minute speech from the President of the United States. Let's go now. This just happened minutes ago. Joe Biden took to the podium to say this.
Before I head to North Carolina, I wanted to speak a few moments about what's going on our college campuses here. We've all seen images, and they put to the test two fundamental American principles. Excuse me. The first is the right to free speech and for people to peacefully assemble and make their voices heard. The second is the rule of law. Both must be upheld. We are not an authoritarian nation where we silence people or squash dissent. The American people are heard. In fact, peaceful protest is in the best tradition of how Americans respond to consequential issues. But, neither are we a lawless country. We are a civil society, and order must prevail. Throughout our history, we've often faced moments like this because we are a big, diverse, free-thinking, and freedom-loving nation. In moments like this, there are always those who rush in to score political points. But this isn't a moment for politics. It's a moment for clarity.
So let me be clear. Peaceful protest in America. Violent protest is not protected. Peaceful protest is. It's against the law when violence occurs. Destroying property is not a peaceful protest. It's against the law. Vandalism, trespassing, breaking windows, shutting down campuses, forcing the cancellation of classes and graduations. None of this is a peaceful protest. Threatening people, intimidating people, instilling fear in people is not a peaceful protest. It's against the law. Dissent is essential to democracy, but dissent must never lead to disorder or to denying the rights of others so students can finish the semester and their college education. Look, it's basically a matter of fairness. It's a matter of what's right. There's the right to protest, but not the right to cause chaos. People have the right to get an education, the right to get a degree, the right to walk across the campus safely without fear of being attacked. But let's be clear about this as well. There should be no place on any campus, no place in America, for anti-Semitism or threats of violence against Jewish students. There is no place for hate speech or violence of any kind, whether it's anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, or discrimination against Arab Americans or Palestinian Americans. It's simply wrong. There's no place for racism in America. It's all wrong. It's un-American. I understand people have strong feelings and deep convictions. In America, we respect the right and protect the right for them to express that. But it doesn't mean anything goes. It needs to be done without violence, without destruction, without hate, and within the law. You know, make no mistake. As president, I will always defend free speech, and I will always be just as strong in standing up for the rule of law. That's my responsibility to you, the American people, my obligation to the Constitution. Thank you very much.
Mr. President, have the protests forced you to reconsider any of the policies with regard to the region?
No. Thank you.
Mr. President, do you think the National Guard should intervene?
No.
Mr. President,
do you agree with what the
Democrats
are calling for? Mr. President,
so I think the most telling part of that whole speech, he says, "This is, let's not make politics out of this. Let's not make this a political thing." Because Democrats are in a very tough spot right now. The Democrats are being torn asunder by their policy. And again, the best thing for the Republicans to do would be nothing. It would just be nothing. What you just saw there was an attempt at Biden to play both sides, to straddle the fence and not give either side of the Democratic Party ammunition against him. He did a pretty good job, to be honest, but I mean, this is what Democrats do. They'll take these vague, nice-sounding phrases, statements, little words they come up with. I mean, there is something intrinsically hilarious about Joe Biden talking about the rule of law. And this is one of the things, like the previous caller we had. There's always this like, well, but the, you know, it's going through the system and that's all good. You know, it's like, well, Donald Trump is being charged with 100 different felonies to try to destroy his presidential campaign. They're costing him hundreds of millions of dollars, trying to take his buildings away. This is clear political persecution. And they're just like, he'll have his day in court. You know, and if the court finds him innocent, then that's just the process working as intended. They're abusing the process in all of these things. Joe Biden talking about the rule of law as he flies in 400,000 migrants to avoid the line at the border and bring them into this country despite them not fulfilling the requirements to be refugees. Story from New York Post, published yesterday, 400,000 migrants flown to U.S. under Biden parole program, likely staying here forever, say experts. Oh yes, Biden's a big champion of the rule of law, you understand. He loves the rule of law when he can abuse it to any degree. And again, just going back to this CIA article, I mean, this is the level of absurdity that we've arrived at. That you have a CIA agent bragging about spying on Donald Trump, bragging about withholding information from the elected commander-in-chief so that the spy agencies can continue their operations without any oversight from the civilian elected members of our government. And then to justify that, he says, you know, we got to save democracy. You know, we got to save democracy. That's why we are destroying democracy. Democracy is our, you know, the rule of the people. It's the foundation of what we believe, which is why when the people elect somebody we don't like, we launch illegal investigations in order to destroy their attempt at gaining any power. And once they do gain power, despite all of our illegal moves, we'll simply withhold information to, you know, cripple his ability to be an effective leader, you know, to save democracy. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I would prefer just if they would just come out and just be tyrants. I mean, it's the sneakiness that's really infuriating. If you're just going to, you know, crush your political opponents under the weight of lawsuits, don't tell me it's the rule of law. Don't tell me nobody's under the law. If you're going to make free speech laws that violate the First Amendment, just do it. Don't tell me that this is all in line with our foundational principles. It's obviously not. If you're going to open up the border and flood our country with tens of millions of illegal migrants brought here on the back of UN taxpayer-funded organizations, just tell me you're invading the country. Don't pretend like this is some sort of humanitarian requirement. And if you're going to forcibly shut down peaceful protests, don't talk to me about the rule of law. It's just so dishonest. It's all just so dishonest. And like I said, I mean, finally it's reaching to the point that more mainstream neocon, Con Inc. style people are actually waking up to the threat that we're under. And it's not coming from one particular sector. It's coming from like 1,000 different sectors all at once. We're being undercut financially, spiritually, physically. And we can get into some of that next. The testimony from Ralph Baric about the Wuhan Institute and the way that they created the coronavirus. But while everybody plays catch up, I just want to remind you, we have understood the true scope and scale of this tyranny for years and have been railing against it long before it got to this dire circumstance. Please support us at InfoWarsStore.com so we can continue this mission of being far, far ahead of the curve. It's almost just frustrating. So here's some good news about what's going on. Because the frustrating part about it's always bittersweet. It's bittersweet when you have someone like James O'Keefe bust the CIA, saying in their own words exactly what we've known about them the whole time. Sort of bittersweet. I mean, it's good. It's good that we have them on tape. It's good that he's out there doing this great work and getting, again, in their own words, I mean, we can say it all we want. It is more impactful when it comes from them. It's good to see that. It's frustrating that it still goes on. And the most frustrating part about all of it is that these bombshell undercover investigations reveal this type of information over and over again, and nothing is done about it. Well, that may be changing as Matt Gaetz demands in congressional investigation of intelligence community after undercover footage shows CIA office official boasting that feds spied on withheld information from President Trump. So I don't know, but to my memory, this would be the first time that footage from James O'Keefe has actually had congressional action as a consequence. Matt Gaetz has called for Congress to investigate the intelligence community in response to the release of journalist James O'Keefe's bombshell undercover footage that shows a CIA official boasting intelligence agencies deliberately withheld information from Donald Trump while he was in office. And like we've said a million times. That's right, yeah, there was action on Acorn. But I mean, how many times have we seen, I mean, the number of things that he's busted people saying, it's incredible. And maybe this won't go anywhere. Maybe it will. if this does go somewhere, or even the fact that he's making this statement represents a first step in combating the usurpation of our entire governmental system by the intelligence agencies. That's what's happened over the last several decades, is that slowly but surely the powers ordained by the Constitution to rest with the Congress have been usurped by the intelligence communities. And they've achieved this by disguising their actions under the claims of national security, by getting Congress to sign bills to allow them to do such a thing, also by blackmail, by spying on Congress. And at this point, it's pretty blatant. There is no civilian oversight of the intelligence agencies, meaning that we, the people, have no ability to affect, know about, certainly not intercede on the actions of the deep state intelligence apparatus. So it's going to be a very hard row to hoe to try to claw back oversight powers from the CIA. But maybe undercover videos like this could spur more Republicans to action. What Republican Matt Gaetz said is, quote, "I'm formally calling on the Weaponization Subcommittee to immediately launch an investigation into O'Keefe Media Group's bombshell report containing video evidence that American intelligence agencies withheld intelligence from President Donald Trump before and during his presidency and used Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act authorities to spy on President Trump." If only. If only this video was the thing that revealed that they were spying on Trump. It's just, it's another piece of evidence. It's another example to throw into the pile of these things being admitted and well known. But just knowing it is not the point. Doing something about it has to be the point. It's up to the Congress to reclaim their power. And honestly, I think most Congress people are happy to have the power usurped. I think they're happy to allow somebody else to do it. So if you're at work and you're doing some report and your coworker comes up and is like, you know what, let me take care of that. Great. You do this. Right? The CIA, hey, you don't worry yourselves about who we're spying on or how we're running black ops around the world to overthrow countries. You got enough on your plate already, Congress. Let us take care of this. And I think Congress is happy to allow them to do it, because then they don't have to justify the decisions to their constituents. They don't have to make enemies of the CIA. They're happy to allow this power to be usurped. But that is what's happening. It is a overthrow of the United States government. It's already happened for all intents and purposes. There's been a slow-moving coup whose capstone was January 6th, the 2020 election, and the ensuing riot that has been used to round up political dissidents around the country. That was sort of their final act of securing this. And now they're just coming out and admitting it. You know, previously they went through great pains to pretend that they were still under the oversight of the elected representatives. That's the big change that's happening now, is they're just not hiding it anymore. They're not concealing their actions as the shadow government. They're making it public. That is the real change here. I don't think this James O'Keefe story was like a press release by the CIA, but so many other things have come out in the recent past where they're basically saying, yeah, you know, we're in charge. We're in charge. And these so-called, you know, oversight committees will bend to our will whenever we want. So just really think about that. Really consider what that means. InfoWars has the article, "Deep State Coup. Intelligence agency spied on, withheld information President Trump, CIA official admits." For all of their talk about the importance of democracy, of the structures of our government that are sacred, it's all just rhetorical cover for what we all know to be true. The actual full-fledged takeover of the American government by unelected often unknown by the public, members of the intelligence agencies who operate in a closed society of secrecy. And of course, have been responsible for the greatest atrocities the world has ever seen, up to and including the release of COVID-19. Now, this came out yesterday. I meant to cover it, but it's the same type of thing. We know all of this. We know all of this, and we've known this for years, but we're getting more confirmation now. Ralph Baric, whose virology techniques were used in Wuhan, testified that the lab leak was possible. That isn't news to anybody, but they're admitting it. They're coming out and admitting it now. Baric testified that he had specifically warned Zhi Zhengali that the Wuhan Institute of Virology's critical coronavirus research was being conducted in labs with insufficient biosafety protections. And yet it went on regardless. Baric testified not technically under oath, but what it says is he was required by federal law to answer truthfully. While there's little in the 212-page transcript that is likely to markedly shift the debate on how COVID-19 originated, the picture that emerges is of an American scientist who's deeply wary of his Chinese counterparts and has no way of knowing if or how they may have made use of the groundbreaking research techniques he developed. And he also criticized Peter Daszak for claiming that the Wuhan Institute of Virology conducted coronavirus research in labs with sufficient biosafety protocols, because he knew full well that they didn't have sufficient biosafety protocols. There had been multiple calls about accidental leakage or spills or people being bitten by the animals that they're testing on in the Wuhan Institute of Virology in the months leading up to the coronavirus outbreak. And this is a good reminder of the truly diverse nature of the tyranny coming towards us. This is the thing. It's not coming from one sector. It's not coming from one quadrant. We're surrounded by wolves. We're surrounded by predators waiting for us to let our guard down. In this little article alone, I don't even know what nationality Ralph Baric is. Peter Daszak, this guy from the UK. You got the Chinese, obviously, is a big part of the coronavirus scam-demic that they ran. It's like from every angle, you've got attacks. And at every time, it's the American people, the American way of life, the American system of upholding liberty that's in the crosshairs. One way or another, they require your submission. That's all. Just take a knee. It's a simple ask. Just take a knee, bow your head, and give up the ability to speak your mind.